time again for Midday Eats with Hong and Shields. Today, we listen back to one of our favorite editions of the program, an hour on big nights and memorable meals. We asked listeners to describe the most memorable meals they ever had, and the results were great. We heard vivid descriptions of home-cooked dinners and unusual meals in distant lands. Listen to Henry Hong of Thames Street Oyster House and John Shields of Gertrude's Restaurant compare notes with other Midday listeners on what makes a meal last in our memories, whether a quiet dinner for two, or hamburgers on a campfire on a summer night, or a grand dinner in a fancy restaurant. A Midday Eats encore, stories of memorable meals, after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks, thank you again for joining us for the second hour of our show today. Midday Eats happens the second Friday of every month with local chefs at John Shields of Gertrude's Restaurant in the Baltimore Museum of Art and Henry Hong, food writer, food nerd. Henry, nice to see you.
Nice to see you too, Dan.
John, nice to see you too.
Hey, Dan.
Whenever we compare notes on food, how to cook it, where to eat when you're going out, what's new and different on the local food scene, we always look for the positive, where to find good food and beverage, and how to make a great dinner. And of course, we draw on experience and memory when we have those conversations. Now, some moments of culinary pleasure last longer in memory than others. The first time you visited a real linen and silver restaurant and received first-class treatment from a waiter in a tuxedo. The winter's day you went to a busy Chinese restaurant full of clatter and steam and aromas and had Peking duck as it was meant to be made and presented. The long and happy meal you had in the home of a relative, soup to nuts with three courses, maybe four courses, and lots of conversation. Or maybe the meals that last in memory have more to do with the company and the conversation than with what was served at that moment. So we'd like to hear from you today. We thought we'd talk about this during this session of Midday Eats with Henry and John. How would you answer that question? What was the most memorable meal you ever had? Or maybe there's more than one. Perhaps you can name one or two and describe them in rich detail. We really would go for the detail here. Perhaps it was an elaborate dinner that you had in a foreign country while you were traveling, or an unexpectedly simple but memorable supper that was served to you at a relative's house after a long trip and you were tired and really hungry. Or maybe it was the simple pleasure of a fresh melon or a bowl of berries served on someone's porch on a summer day, something like that. Whatever it was, start thinking about this, folks, and please share your stories with us this hour. Your most memorable meal, a meal so memorable you'd order it again for your last supper. Also, our email address, because you can sit and write this, and I'll read it. I'll read your description on the air, midday@wypr.org. So, John, we'll start with you. I guess I might ask you what makes a memorable meal for you, and then have you cite one or two, or however many you brought with you today.
Oh, my. We'd have to sit for a while now.
Yeah.
You know?
You've had many, you think?
Yeah, I've had quite a number, and many things influence it. You know, time, place, people that are around you, smells, and not only the smells of the food. It was interesting. You were just doing the introduction, which was lovely, and I was getting all these images, and I came up with a whole different dinner. Whole different dinner just because of your description. Of some
you mean
of the,
you mean other than
just
the
second.
Ones you had taken notes
yeah,
for?
Yeah, I made see. All these notes.
So what else came to mind as I was describing that?
I was up in Cape Cod, mm-hmm. in Provincetown. I had just moved up there. It was in the 1970s. It was in the fall, kind of chilly. And there was this long pier that went out. It was wooden, and it was high tide. And the waves were coming up and hitting against the pier. And there was this place, it was called the Old Fish House. All wood. You could actually look down and see the water because there was cracks in the flooring underneath and you could hear it. And in the corner, they had kind of a pot-bellied wood stove. And so that wonderful aroma
of wood burning.
Wow. So it was chilly. You had that. They had candles on the table, all these wooden tables. And I had something. from Baltimore, right? I just moved up there, and I had never had haddock. And so they had haddock almondine. Now it doesn't sound so, you know, fancy schmancy.
Right.
But to me, a kid from Baltimore who had just moved up there in the
70s,
fish with nuts on it and this wonderful butter, I thought I died and I went to heaven. It came with a baked potato, green beans.
Perfect.
And my life was complete at that moment. Wow. Everything was good.
Oh, that haddock. Yeah. I can picture that haddock, John, because it's a nice,
clean,
white meat fish, nice and thick.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ah. Yeah. It was an amazing night.
And you have a bit of a storm going outside.
Yeah.
Did you say what time of year it was?
It was the fall.
You said the fall.
And it was chilly. It was perfect. Yeah. It was just like a perfect meal. And I totally forgot until you just started talking.
What got you thinking? What were you thinking about, Henry?
As John was going through his intro, I thought of something else as well. Now, I don't want to mention that one just yet because it involves fast food, so it's kind of cheating.
We'll get to that later.
So the one is, so every summer I used to go to Korea and spend time with my aunts. I have five aunts out there, so we'd go to each aunt's house. One of them, our second oldest aunt, has a hospital out in the boonies of Korea, so it's hot,
she
dusty.
She owns and runs a hospital?
Yeah, she and her husband, she was an Eastern-style doctor, so she practiced acupuncture and herbal treatments and things like that, and he was a Western-style doctor. So, and they would treat all the local villagers of this country town. But in any case, so they had a what's called an ajumma, it's like middle-aged lady who takes care of the house, cooks the meals, et cetera, et cetera. And so because of jet lag and because I was lazy, I guess, I would always wake up later than everyone else. And there was, of course, no air conditioning, except for their bedroom had a window unit. So walking in that room was like walking into freaking paradise in those hot summer days. And so I would eat breakfast by myself. So I just remember the first day I was there, still groggy, walking into that air conditioning room, sitting down on these little flat cushions that they have. And the ajumma brings this square table, which usually is reserved for the entire family to eat off of. But since I was by myself, she placed it in front of me, and it was probably maybe 2 feet by 1 foot, large table. And the whole thing, I remember focusing
on... Well, that's
not
2 feet by 1 foot? That's not a very big table.
Right, and so everybody would sit around it. And so it's not like a dining room table. This is like an Asian-style low table that you can move back and forth and bring in from the kitchen with the food already on it.
Oh, getcha.
Yeah.
Getcha, yeah.
A tiny bowl of white rice in the middle, and then surrounded by probably 50, maybe 40 or 50 little tiny dishes. All, you know, when you go to Korean restaurants, you get those little side dishes.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, it was amazing.
You're not exaggerating, 50 little dishes?
Yes. I mean,
just for Henry.
Yes. A total array of all different things.
How old were you?
I think I was like 12, man. And I, you know, it's one of those things. A lot of these stories, now that I think about it, are that age when I was like, you know, my earlier mid-teens.
Right.
That's probably, I guess, what I owe this to right now, talking to you, honestly, all those experiences.
From the ajumma.
Yeah, from the ajumma. Yeah. My mom taking me to, prime rib. The first time I went to prime rib was one of my memories that I had.
Here in Baltimore.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's the waiter in the tuxedo.
Yes.
And being treated like a king,
they took a blazer out from the closet.
Because you didn't have one?
Yes, of course not.
Uh-huh.
We didn't know.
Exactly.
And they put this, it was green. It was like the player championship type blazer. It was like a green, big-ass jacket. They just put it on me. The guy had white gloves. I remember all this, man.
Yeah. I remember my reference to that is, John, do you remember a Georgetown place called Je Nuit?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
First time I went there, I was way back in the 70s, and I think I was still wearing Madras pants. And anyway, that's my first memory of with waiters and tuxedos and being treated with elegance in a fancy place like that. But I have a memory from teenage years of a memorable meal.
Yeah.
And it's Italian, of course. You might hear me make a few references to Italian meals. But this was... a cousin of my mother's who lived in Boston, and I had never met her before. We'd never been to her house before. My mother was a very good cook of Italian food, But this was one of those meals where you arrived at about 1 o'clock and then started eating, and it's getting to be dark. It's the fall. It's like 5 or 6 o'clock, and we're still eating. We're still at the table. I mean, she brought out first a soup, a tortellini soup, followed by a chicken course, a roast chicken, very simple, with roast potatoes, and then a bourgeole.
Nice.
You know what a bourgeole
is? The rolled meat.
Rolled meat that's stuffed with sort of an egg bread stuffing, and been simmering in the marinara sauce.
Oh, my God, now I want brajol.
Yeah. And then she made homemade ravioli, so that came. And you know how you have small plates now in restaurants, right? Uh-huh. These were all kind of small plate courses, but it just kept going on and on. And the men are talking, and the wine's pouring. And it's my brother Eddie and I were looking at each other saying, oh, my God, there's more coming. And then there was, I think it was a roast pork after that. This is like at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
That is awesome.
And everybody got very well reacquainted that day, all these cousins who hadn't seen each other in a while. And it was literally soup to nuts. It finished with grapes and some fruit and some nuts on the table. And, of course, some grappa, some espresso, some sambuca, something like that.
Yeah.
Some anisette at the end of the meal. And, you know, we didn't leave till 6 or 7 o'clock. It was one of those just long. I'll never forget it. I was probably 14 at the time or something like that.
Yeah.
So memorable meals. We'd like to hear from our listeners on this. Madeline posted on Twitter her memorable meal was medallions of beef and veal, medaillon de bœuf et veau, grilled lamb chop, and a roasted half Maine lobster tail. So Madeline, where was that? I'd like to know a little bit more about it. Can you tweet us again with some more information? I'd like to know where that was.
Wait, but that was all one meal?
That's what it sounds
Holy
like.
Holy cow.
Yeah, gosh. A little more detail. Or you can send
it's like
us
every type of animal.
Yeah.
Send us an email. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Before we go to the phone lines, John, you actually took the time to think about this and write down some things.
Yeah.
So what else did you have? Did you have another memorable meal you can describe for us?
Well, Italian meals.
Okay.
I think probably most of us have an Italian meal, a great
memory.
Italian meal memory. Yeah. And so when you were just talking about your family, it started me thinking about the Franchettis, who lived right behind us. So many courses. It was kind of like an Italian Babette's feast.
And on a Sunday?
Sunday. Yeah. Things just kept coming and coming and coming. And I, you know, Irish.
Do you remember one in particular?
I mean, as you said.
Oh, you Irish Catholic guys.
Irish Catholic.
Very impressed
we
at
didn't
this.
Have that.
Yeah.
We had a, we had a boiled chicken. We had a boiled chicken, some mashed potatoes, peas, and carrots. And then you go over there, and, you know, these beautiful roast chickens are coming out with ravioli and lasagna. And then they would be having, they made it like a French toast that would come out. And
a French toast?
A French toast. They would always have French toast.
With
dinner? And it was a savory. It was a savory French toast.
A savory French toast.
Yes.
Can I just say something about that?
Yeah.
Portuguese side of my family, Portuguese grandmother would take a marinade of, this, you know, vinegar-based marinade, like a vinaigrette, and dip stale bread in it. And I don't know how she did this. Then dip it in egg and fry it in a pan. And that was a sort of a savory
exactly.
French-Portuguese toast, I guess.
Yeah, well, it was
very strong flavor.
Yeah, and it was, again, something I had never seen. Hmm. But I loved it. Everything was different. It was distinct. And it came out little by little by little by little. They would have dandelion salad. Because they would go and pick all the dandelions out in the neighborhood and with hard-boiled eggs with it, and just a wonderful thing. And they had all their own vineyards right here, and it was in Parkville.
And they grew grapes. And
grew grapes, and they brought over a big wooden press from Italy, and
what?
They would make all their own wine. So it was like
that
this just amazing feast, and the complexity of it, yet simple, was amazing.
Sure.
Yeah.
And how old were you?
Probably 10.
Okay, first being exposed to this big, elaborate Italian meal.
Yeah.
Coming from a sort of limited diet. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay. Elizabeth on Twitter says, memorable meal, my grandma's baked chicken, mashed potatoes, green beans. I swear it tasted of unconditional love. So you can contribute something like that on Twitter. It's midday@WYPR, or just midday. WYPR or Dan Rodericks. We'll take a little break here and start taking some phone calls right after this, so hang in there, folks. Big nights and memorable meals. Meals so memorable you'd order them again as your last supper. Elizabeth, very simple on Twitter, says, pisto soup on a back patio in the south of France.
divine. So many fresh flavors. Pistou is P-I-S-T-O-U.
Yeah.
What is that, John?
It's like a pesto. It's basil, olive oil.
So the soup is based on that.
Yes.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Mike in Hamden, we're going to start with you. Thanks for calling midday, Mike. Your memorable meal.
Oh, thanks. I had grown up in a real tough environment. My dad only liked what he liked, and he didn't like very much. And when I went to the University of Maryland, I hooked up with a friend who grew up in Bethesda, who in the D.C. area, whose parents took them out to dinner and stuff all the time. And we went on two double dates about 3 weeks apart. The first one was to the Astor restaurant, which was a Greek restaurant. Never had Greek food before. And the next one was to a place called the Calvert Cafe. It's still in existence today. It's called Mama Yisha's Calvert Cafe. It's for Lebanese food. First time I ever ate lamb. I thought I had died and gone to heaven. I can just close my eyes and still taste those two meals, and it totally changed my life as far as what I eat from then on.
Right, the first impression is so strong if you're experiencing something for the first time.
Definitely,
that's very true for you and your story about the Italian.
Absolutely.
And you, but Henry, now you had had exposure to Korean food in this country growing up here.
I mean, almost exclusively at home. That's why, again, you know, I mentioned this so many times. I go to a friend's house and they'd have something like meatloaf. I'd be like, oh my God, what is this? Amazing, you know.
Right. In my Roman Catholic Italian American family, I had an aunt who married a man who was Seventh Day Adventist. So they were vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
And going to their house was a completely different experience than all the other relatives who were cooking, you know, Italian sausage, meatballs and spaghetti and lasagna and ravioli. There you would have this very odd kind of would pass for vegetarian meals, lots of Jell-Os and things like that.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. Yeah, Jell-O salads and things like that. So, but I thought it was neat when I was a kid. I thought, hey, this is so different than what we're used to eating.
For sure.
But in some sense, memorable. Eating vegetarian hot dogs, soy hot dogs for the first time in my life.
You know what you just reminded me of? I remember going to another friend's house for dinner, and on the plate, one of the side dishes, I guess, was just plain old sliced white bread. Is that a thing?
With certain people.
I started trying to make a sandwich out of it. Like, no.
You just eat it.
You just eat it. I was like, that doesn't make any sense.
You put any butter on
it? It's not even a roll, man.
Without butter?
I don't remember there being any butter. I think it was like to sop up the sauce or something.
I went to their house.
I just thought it was so weird, you know.
Micah is our next caller. Thank you for calling midday. Hi, Micah. Go right ahead with your memorable meal, please.
Well, mine is actually more about the experience than the actual food.
Mm-hmm.
But it was when I was in elementary school at Hunter's Woods Elementary School in Virginia. And they had a whole medieval times themed dinner, so we got to get dressed up. And then we came, our teachers were serving us, and they were dressed up. And then we had rotisserie chicken, I believe, and roasted potatoes and lemon meringue. And the cool thing to me was that you got to eat with your hands instead of, like, having silverware.
Right.
And then to clean your fingers, you put it in, like, this rose water or something. I don't remember because I was 12. But
yeah.
But it was just the whole experience was very memorable, and I've, like, never forgot that.
That sounds like fun, Micah. It's sort of a medieval theme dinner, costume dinner. It does sound memorable. You get to eat with your fingers. They didn't serve you any mead, did they? While visiting my brother and his future French-Italian wife in France, writes Frank, in the fall of 1983, we took a week-long trip to her family's village in Piedmont in northwest Italy. We spent days helping her father pick apples and pears, taking frequent breaks from Nebbiolo and assorted delicious, simple local foods. We had most meals under a grape arbor that attached to the farmhouse we stayed in. A fig tree grew by a south corner. One evening, the extended family gathered in the 90-something grandfather's house. He was affectionately called Nonnu by everyone, and his house certainly predates our country. Old, stone, simple, and spare, located on a courtyard in the village. Nonnu had made polenta, bragging about the strength of his arm and the hour he spent stirring the pot of his cornmeal, right? My sister-in-law's mother made a frittata on the wood-fired range that heated our farmhouse. Someone brought some cooked chorizo, and there was a local gorgonzola. We served ourselves from a steaming plate of polenta, buried a big slice of gorgonzola into it, and topped it with a slice of egg. There were breadsticks and the sausage on the side, lightly effervescent. Family-made dolcetto was poured from a foot above the glasses.
Wow.
I didn't understand a word that was spoken at the table, but communication was not a problem.
That is beautiful.
Frank, that's a thing of beauty. Please, others, please contribute like stories like that.
I want you to forward me that. That is
wonderful. Wow. Wonderful. John, do you have another meal you wanted to tell us about?
Sure. I think, you know, when we were first started to talk about this, I was thinking of it in categories instead of just the best. I mean, we had what I call, one of my categories is once-a-year dinners. Once-a-year dinners. My grandmother, Gertie, was a great cook, and we didn't eat fish all the time, and she would only make her rockfish dinner once a year. And she'd always get a great big, sometimes my father would go fishing.
It was during the season.
Yeah,
probably,
it was during
right?
the season. Yeah. And she would take it, and some of our family were farmers, and they made their own bacon. And she would wrap the rockfish in bacon and put salt and pepper, butter all over top of it, and then she'd pour milk around it, and she'd roast it in a really hot oven. And I just remember waiting for that every year.
The aromas.
And the flavors of the bacon, you know, seeping in through the rockfish. And the rockfish, the skin would be nice and crispy, but it would be so moist from the milk all around it. And
you look forward to that once a year in rockfish season.
Once a year. And then the other time of the year, she would do her sour beef and dumplings. And you'd go into her house, and the whole house would be kind of like permeated this perfume, because there would be cinnamon and allspice and nutmeg. Nutmeg would be in the dumplings, the potato dumplings. Mm. And she had these great big aluminum pans. They were called Guardian, and they had glass tops, and you could stand over and watch the dumplings as they cooked and just smell all of this.
Was that in March? Was that in late winter?
Yeah, it was late winter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was late winter. And always remember that.
Wow.
Loved those dinners.
Thank you, John. More memorable meals from our listeners. Brian in Catonsville, you're on Midday Eats. Hi.
Hi, yeah. A couple of years ago, my wife and I and a couple other family members had a chance to travel through Europe a little bit. And we were in a town called... it's outside of an area in Tyrol, Austria, and it was more the experience, and the food was spectacular, but it was like being transported back 200 years because everyone was still in traditional clothing, and there was a choir group singing where we happened to be eating dinner, and the sun was breaking through storm clouds in the Alps, and it was just a spectacular sight, and the food was great, and being a family, just absolutely unforgettable.
See, that's a story where the place and the atmosphere is as important as to the meal as the meal itself, as what you ate. Do you actually remember what you ate, Brian?
It was a mixed pork dish, pork loin and bacon, and that's what the Germans seem to do best, is all-around pork. We must have sat there for 4 hours, but I could have sat there all night. It was just unbelievable.
Thank you for that story. Appreciate that. Henry, you had another one for us? Another memorable meal.
I did, but it's yet another one that I didn't even think about when I came here today.
Okay.
So we went on a family vacation to Jamaica. I don't know if you guys have ever been to Rick's Cafe out there. It's like out of a movie, man. So like we waded out from the beach, probably about waist deep onto this motorboat. And at the time it was raining, so we got on this motorboat. The guy driving the motorboat was like a nut. I mean, he was just hitting all the waves and the boat was just going crazy up and down. My mom was crying, bawling because she was so scared. But eventually we went around this bend into this sheer cliff, and now that the storm had passed and it was sunny, and there's like kids cliff diving from the cliff, crystal blue waters, pulled up next to this, it's like this little landing platform on the side of this cliff with stairs carved into, I'm serious, I'm not making this up,
carved into the
side of this cliff. Mm-hmm. As we pull up and get out of the boat, all these little tiny crabs like, you know, skitter out of the way. So we make our way up the cliff. And the whole time, you know, kids are just cliff diving off this 50-foot cliff. It's like a very, I mean, just sheer, probably 50, 60 feet. And so we're having dinner, and I remember, the only thing I remember
about
the
dinner. Where are
you having dinner? Rick's Cafe, this place
called
Rick's
Cafe. Now, is that up at the top of the steps?
At the top of the cliff, yes, at the top of this cliff.
Okay.
You know, overlooking the ocean and, you know, just watching these the cliff divers and stuff. And the first course we got served, listen, man, the first course we got served, and this is the first time I had, I think I was like 11 or 12, like I said, it's the same age, was smoked salmon. And it was like real traditional style with the capers and the finely chopped red onions and the, you know, hard-boiled eggs and all that stuff. And I was like, what is this? You know, I'd never...
Now, were you, well, you didn't know enough to
I didn't
ask
know what it was.
At the time. I'd be a little surprised at you getting a salmon
now that I look
in
back
Jamaica.
At, I know, now that I look
versus
back
versus a tropical fish.
Doesn't make any sense.
Right,
I know.
Right.
That's the food I remember from Jamaica, as a matter of fact, for whatever
isn't that
reason.
Funny? Your first memory of salmon is in Jamaica.
Smoked salmon. So yeah. I would, but as
a
follow-up.
Oh, this is smoked salmon.
Yeah, smoked salmon. Okay. Like, you know, the traditional style with all the little accoutrements
did you have
around
little
it.
Capers or,
yes,
or
yes,
shallot with
yes,
it?
Yes, the hard-boiled eggs, all that stuff.
Oh, nice.
And so I went smoked salmon crazy when I got back home. I managed to find the closest deli in our neighborhood. It was Kaplan's Deli at a shopping center on Liberty Road. It was like a 45-minute walk from the house, but I would make it out there like every week to get smoked salmon, man. Kaplan's Deli.
That's it's an oddball story.
I know.
You,
all
Henry.
My stories are a little oddball,
that's
man.
That's good.
I'm sorry.
It's great. Diana in Baltimore is our next listener calling in with a memorable meal. Hi, Diana.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Good. So I was calling about a meal that I had at a restaurant called Teller's. I don't remember the name of the town, but it was in Long Island. And I was there with a man I love dearly. And we had been wandering around Long Island. And we drove past this place. And it was just really interesting looking because it's an old bank building.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went in, it was just, it was a gorgeous space. There were different dining rooms. We were in a room that was kind of off of the bar, and we were sitting in these big, deep, chocolate brown leather chairs that were so comfy, and we had the best waitress in the world. And again, it was, as a couple of other people have said, it was so much about the atmosphere and the experience. The food was wonderful, but I know that I had fish. I know I had a salad. I know I had fish. I know I had something chocolatey for dessert. I don't remember the details of what I ate. I remember the experience, and I remember that I was so moved by the experience that I wrote a really long letter to the manager about how fabulous our waitress was because she was spectacular.
And you were in an old bank building, and this place you think was called Peller's,
P-E-L-L-E-R. I know it's called Peller's. T-E-L-L-E-R-S,
like bank tellers.
Because
okay.
I still get, I'm on their email list.
Oh, okay.
I still get emails about when they're having, they have like cigar and whiskey nights and they have, you know, steak nights and whatever. And I still get emails from them. So it helps to, you know, take me back to how great that night was.
Great. Thank you, Diana. Thanks for the story. Irene in Timonium, you're on Midday Next. Hi.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm recalling a wonderful, wonderful picnic last year when we hiked through parts of Tuscany with Wilderness Travel, a California outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And we had walked for 4 hours. We were tired and exhausted despite the weather was beautiful and so on and so forth. And there we came upon our picnic space, which Giuseppe and Amy had chosen amongst wild cyclamens and cypresses and nice and shady, and it was just fantastic. And they had presented us with arugula salad and other salads and ham, salamis, pecorino cheeses, stuffed little red peppers, boar jerky, olive spreads, fresh fruit, excellent red and white wines, and for dessert, almond cookies with a lovely dessert wine.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was just, you know, after having been really exhausted, we were hungry, and we were a group of 11 hikers, and it was just a memorable experience.
Oh, that's beautiful, Irene. Thank you. That sounds like a little piece of heaven there.
I can totally picture it so vividly.
Yeah.
I know that it's a special kind of hunger after a hike, man.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Boy, that's a great story. This hour is making me particularly hungry.
Starving.
Of our shows do. Here's an email from Kathleen in Roland Park. She says, my all-time favorite meal would be just about any summer Sunday in the 1950s at my grandparents' house in Atlanta. The menu would be fried chicken, rice, and cream milk gravy, field peas, corn cut from the cob and sautéed briefly, probably in bacon grease, not butter, green beans cooked for a very long time, again involving a pork product, cucumbers, likely in a vinegar dressing, and sliced tomatoes. A dessert would be either peach pie or what my grandmother called lemon cheesecake, which was a yellow cake with lemon curd between the layers. And a seven-minute frosting on top. A seven-minute frosting. You ever heard that phrase,
oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
John?
Yeah.
The beverage was always sweet tea. Yum. Kathleen, thank you for the memory.
Thank
you very much. Unfortunately, we have to take a little break. We'll come back and share some more memorable meals with you. Dan Roderick's here with Henry Hong and John Shields. So close your eyes, not if you're driving, but close your eyes and take a minute to go back in your memory to a time when you had a particularly memorable meal. Most of us can come up with a time, a place. We have done that already in this hour. Maybe it was a special night out in a well-regarded restaurant, or maybe it was during a trip where the food was particularly intriguing and unusual, or maybe it was even at home with family. So share that memory with us today. We decided we'd ask folks to share memorable meals, meals so memorable you'd order them again as your last supper. Dan Roderick's here for Midday Eats with Henry Hong and John Shields. I wanted to read another email, and then we'll go back to the phone lines, guys. This is from Bud and Debbie, but I can't tell which one's writing. The Inn at Little Washington.
Oh, yeah.
You know that one, John?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I work for a company that designed commercial kitchens. We designed the kitchen for Chef Patrick. When the kitchen was up and functional, Chef Patrick invited the design crew to his chef's table off to the side of the kitchen. The menu was Chef Patrick's choice. It was mostly small creations a la minuit, made more enjoyable by watching Patrick's performance just for us. So you're in a special place, a new place, and the chef's cooking just for you. That's pretty good. Pete, in Baltimore? Pete's not ready. How about Phil? Phil's ready to tell us his story. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
Go right ahead with your memory, please.
Well, I've had many memorable meals, but my most memorable perhaps happened just last Thursday when friends took me to the prime rib for dinner. For the last 2 months, I've been dieting and eating reconstituted food. It's helped me to lose 37 pounds, but it certainly wasn't very tasty. So going to the prime rib at the end of that period was a real thrill. And contrary to my usual having crab cakes, I had their prime rib, a huge slab, medium rare, green bird potato skins, corn off the cob, a glass of champagne, and their chocolate dessert. It's one of the most memorable meals I've ever had.
I was going to say, after 2 months of dehydrated food,
yeah.
Wow. Especially.
I'm curious now, Phil. So in your mind, as you go forward now, where do you put that? Do you keep savoring that and sticking with your diet plan and maybe think of treating yourself in another month or two? Or how are you going to do this?
Well, I've been there before many times, and I'm going many times again. I will treat myself. I will also say that I write a blog where I post a recipe every day, some of them fairly complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And to be posting fairly complicated recipes and to be eating reconstituted, dehydrated food was not a lot of fun. So a prime rib dinner at the end of all that was a great treat, and I will savor it.
Thank you.
While I'm continuing my diet for the last 5 pounds, and I will go again, maybe at the end, to celebrate the last 5 pounds.
Right. Well, congratulations on all that, and thank you for that story, John.
Thanks, Phil.
Yeah, very good. Did you have another story for us, John or Henry? Henry, you said you had something about fast food. Are you sure you want to bring it up?
I mean, no, I'm not ashamed of it or anything, but I just
you
feel
said
like
it was a memorable meal.
It is. It's one of the kind of very few memories I have of my dad. We didn't spend a whole lot of time with my dad because he was working a lot. So anyway, on Sundays, the whole family would go to church. So because we were at church during the day, nobody had time to cook dinner. So we would always go, and it was a special treat for us because, you know, again, at home we cooked. We had exclusively real traditional simple Korean food all the time. So anything, any departure from that was, you know, exotic and just amazing regardless. So on the way home from church, I still, you know, I've looked for this spot. I cannot find it. I think the church was somewhere out towards Marriottsville.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, We stopped by a KFC. This is back, well, it was called Kentucky Fried Chicken back then. And it came in those buckets.
Right.
Picked up a bucket. Smelled amazing in the car, obviously. And we found this one spot by the side of the road. There was a picnic table, and it was under this big tree. And we just sat down at this table, started eating chicken as a family. And I remember walking around barefoot and, like, stepping on these, like, sharp, prickly things that really hurt my feet. So I'm guessing it was, like, a chestnut tree now that I look back on it. And then
you might have been in Patapsco Valley State Park.
Really?
Maybe coming back from Marysville, possibly.
It was a sunny day. I remember watching my grandmother eat, and it was great because my mom hated the chicken skins. So I would look over and this pile of chicken skins would like be growing, and I'm like, "Yes, this is awesome."
You're gonna eat all that.
And then I would eat the chicken, and my dad would take the chicken and yell at me for not being thorough enough with the chicken. This guy, when he ate fried chicken, I swear to God, all the meat is gone, all the cartilage is gone. He would break the chicken bones in half and try to suck the marrow out of these things. By the time he was done with them, it was like a glistening, polished pile of broken chicken bones next to him and, like, you know, half-eaten carcasses and skin in front of me. It was great.
I like that story,
that's
Henry.
Great. Yeah, man.
That's great. You and your dad.
Yeah.
Let's take another call. It's Zach calling from Annapolis with his story. Hi.
Hi. I had just graduated from college. I had my first full-time job in Detroit, and I was coming home one day, and I just decided on a whim that I would go to the casino. And in, like, within 10 minutes of sitting down, I had won, like, $500 on one big hand of three-card poker, and I decided that I would spend as much money as I could at the steakhouse that was at the casino. And so I went there, and this was so I was just, like, drinking, like, scotch and it was my first experience with really great Kobe beef. I remember I had a ribeye steak. And then just with wine and with dessert, actually having one at the casino, it was all just a combination of great experiences.
I can sense that. Yeah. Zach. Yeah. Thank you for that story. Yeah. Totally unexpected, right? He had a good day, and then he treated himself to a great meal.
What a way to go.
Right?
Yeah.
I had one here from David in Towson. He says, many years ago in the 1970s, my Baltimore family was visiting my favorite uncle who lived on Long Island, New York. We spent the summer day at Jones Beach, and then the grown-ups waded out in the surf and harvested clams, which they put in a bucket. We got home and they cooked up a bouillabaisse with the clams and some fish and lobster, which they had readied ahead of time. It was a great meal, made even more special because it was a family get-together. The family was together, and the food had been harvested just hours ago on a beautiful day at the beach. Thank you for that story, David. Pete, in Baltimore, Pete has a story for us. A memorable meal. Go ahead, Pete.
Hi. This is kind of the opposite of luxury or comfortable settings and that kind of thing. This is maybe 20 years ago, we were on a long canoe trip, a week-long trip on the New River, and it was maybe 100 degrees that day, and we had just gone through this rapids called Penitentiary Shoals. The name kind of says it all, and we had also, like, dragged the canoes just loaded with camping gear over, you know, hundreds of yards of rocks and everything, and we arrived at the camping site, and we were absolutely starved, and we had no food, and we saw on our map that there might be a store maybe 2 miles up outside of the valley that we had to hike up in 100-degree heat to get to this general store on this country road, and we bought what we thought were 4 hamburgers, which was about what we thought we could afford. And we hitched a ride back, and we were so tired, and, you know, anything would have been fine. And it turned out we had 16 hamburgers there, and we just cooked them on a fire, and we sat there, and we ate like starving dogs. And nothing ever, ever tasted so good. And my daughter was so ravenous that she actually just chomped down on her own thumb. And at that point, I almost fell over laughing. And it was just kind of like, you know, appreciating food when you just were desperate for it. And I will just never forget it. And, of course, we were eating in this just totally beautiful setting in the outdoors.
When you say the New River, are you talking about West Virginia?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, I thought so. Pete, thanks for that story. It's so interesting to hear what people consider a memorable meal. I like that story,
it
too.
Is.
All these stories are unique and interesting.
A lot of them are outdoors, too.
Yeah. Outdoors, yeah. Yours, your last
yeah.
one was.
Yeah, it was.
Here's Roy in Perry Hall on Midday Now. Hi, Roy.
Hi, how are you today?
Well, I'm getting hungry as we close out this hour here.
Okay. Well, this story takes place back when I was a bodyguard for a chaplain in the 1st Cavalry Division in Vietnam. And we were always looking for, you know, good deeds to do as well as fight the war. And all the chaplains got together and they put out a call to make donations from all the GIs in our division. And they all donated money, and this was to go to a Catholic leper colony run by nuns, French nuns. And so when we had collected all the money, we flew the helicopters into the leper colony and, you know, were shown around the leper colony. And they were so gracious and so grateful for the money that we had donated that they set us up on their veranda, a beautiful 7 to 10 course French meal. And I don't know whether the nuns cook it or whether they had cooks there that did that. But it lasted most of the afternoon, complete with wine and everything. And for the few of us fortunate GIs that were there accompanying the chaplains, this was an unbelievable feast because we were used to eating sea rations.
Right.
And the twist of this story is that I was so moved by the whole experience that I wrote in one of my letters home to my folks what had happened. And my dad was always, you know, promoting the GIs and the good things. And so he sent the letter to the Catholic Review. And one of the readers of the Catholic Review apparently took offense and made a comment back to the editor, and it was entitled Feasting on Charity. And so that ended up winding its way back through the channels to the colonel in my division. And he was head of all the chaplains there. And so he called me on the carpet and said, you know, what did you write? He says, because now I've got this thing that I've got to answer to some congressman or somebody about feasting on charity. So I basically just gave him a copy of the letter. And he wrote back to the Catholic Review saying, you know, by the way, you know, this feasting on charity, these GIs had all collectively donated about $20,000.
Do you remember anything from the meal? Do you remember what you actually ate? It's a great story, Roy.
Meal was unbelievable. It had certainly, you know, the soups that come in the beginning, and some of them were cold. We had, there were roast duck, I believe. They eat a lot of duck over there. There was pork. That we had. I don't remember all the details. It's been so long ago.
All right.
It was followed by, of course, some desserts as well. A brulee, right. I believe.
A creme brulee, right.
Yes, sir.
Here you are in Vietnam. Roy, thank you for that story. What a marvelous story
yeah.
that is. She was in a leper colony. And the nuns are so grateful. They make this 7-course meal, he said.
Wow.
Wow. Andrea, you're on next. You're on Midday. I'm still I'm savoring the last story. We'll listen to yours now, Andrea. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm actually John's neighbor. Hi, John. I live right down the
Oh, it's
court.
A neighbor of yours.
Hey, neighbor. Hey,
okay.
Andrea.
Hi. I just want to describe, like, I'm from Argentina. I was born there. My mom's Argentinian. So we would travel there quite often, usually in the winter here because, you know, there's summer there. And we would gather in the kind of the family summer house. And we would have the traditional asado, which is kind of like, you know, a collection of grilled meats. And it was always kind of cooked by the senior uncle. They didn't want any women cooking it. You would he'd start cooking around 11 o'clock in the morning. And he had this big grill that was in this kind of shelter. We called a quincha, which kind of thatch roof, big open air, you know, place to gather and eat. And he would start usually cooking. The traditional asado usually includes some organ meats, so we would have, like, kidney wrapped in bacon. We'd have my personal favorite, which is chinchilini, which is actually small intestine grilled. It sounds horrible, but it's really good. And they'd have, like, blood sausage and then regular sausage. And it would all be come out, like, he would literally just deliver it to everybody's plate, you know, a small portion, walk around the table and drop off, you know. You could request it, like, more cooked, although they tend to cook things a lot there than, you don't really get rare meat. And then usually it would end with, like, the short rib. Like, here you can kind of get, it's called flank and cut short rib. But it was when we were listening to this, you know, show, I was like, memorable meals. That's, like, one of my most memorable,
my best memories.
A family gathering.
A family gathering, and it sounds like it went on most of the day.
It went on, yeah, pretty long. And the good thing about Argentina, like, they had the tradition of the siesta, so basically everybody was, there's a lot of wine involved, so
right.
Just sort of like wander off and, you know, pass out under a tree or something.
Thank you, Andrea. Thanks for that story.
I want to do that today, like right now.
Sue writes in to say that about 15 years ago, I went to Lafayette, Louisiana, my first ever trip to Louisiana, and after a day of Zydeco dancing in the sun, had dinner at a restaurant called Enola's. I was drinking Abita Turbo Dog beer and had blackened salmon with corn machu, M-A-C-H-O-U-X. I'm not sure what that is. That salmon was so perfectly cooked, this blackened salmon. I'd never had blackened fish before. I can still remember sucking every bite of that fish. And the corn dish was also spicy with fresh tomatoes. My mouth still remembers that meal. Christina writes to say, it's funny to think of this now, but one of my most memorable meals came out of a suitcase. I grew up in L.A., and my mom remarried a man who grew up in Baltimore. He traveled frequently for business. And one night, returning from Baltimore, he unpacked a suitcase of steamed crabs on our dining room table.
What?
It's in there with his Van Heusen shirts. I had never seen such bizarre-looking but enticing-smelling food. I learned how to pick crabs in L.A., and now I'm lucky enough to live in Baltimore. Another call. How about Colin in Hunt Valley? Colin, welcome to Midday.
Hello, Mr. Dan Rodericks. Thank you for taking my call. How are we doing today?
I'm good. What's your memory, most memorable meal?
My most memorable meal was fantastic. I was actually on honeymoon with my wife, Peggy, in Kruger National Park in South Africa. We stayed in a place called Tandatula, which was a game reserve, which had no fences and nothing like that. So on the first night we stayed there, we stayed in a kind of a tent where you had a little porch outside a tent. And that night we actually dined in the park, in the dark. It was remarkable we had a guinea fowl for dinner, which was something I'd never tried before. It's very gamey but very nice. But the remarkable thing was, you were out in the middle of Africa. The guy serving the meal stayed about 300 or 400 yards away, and he had a gun with him, and you had a horn at the dinner table. If any bad, you know, a lion or anything like that came along, you honk the horn and people come running. So not only was he serving us our meal, he was actually serving it with a gun as well, you know, which was remarkable.
Wow.
But it was a beautiful, spectacular place, and, you know, it was just spectacular. The meal was wonderful.
Colin, thank you so much for this story, and thanks to everybody for these stories today. I think this is to be continued another day.
We should definitely do this.
People have so many stories to share with us, and I'm sorry we couldn't get to them all. I thank John Shields and Henry Hong for being here today to share your memories of great meals. So thank you, John, and thank you, Henry.
Thank you, Dan.
My pleasure.
Boy, we got all these emails to read. I'm going to save them and do this another time, okay?
Yeah.
Have a great weekend, everybody.